The most exciting thing about what I do is I get a pilot who's maybe been flying an airliner for the last 10 years, and he wants to do some backcountry flying, and he's experienced and he's knowledgeable. And we get in the airplane, and when the first time we land in someone's field, you know, their eyes are like golf balls, right? They're just like, we can do this? Like, this is amazing. So much like I thought when I first started looking into seaplanes, it seems kind of inaccessible, but it's not.
G'day and welcome everyone to episode number 61 of On The Step With That Mallard Guy. I'm your host, Dan Bolton. On The Step is all about float planes and flying boats. To get in contact with me, my email is dan@thatmallardguy.com, or you can follow me on Instagram and send me a message at @thatmallardguy. On The Step is a proud supporter of the Seaplane Pilots Association and the Seaplane Pilots Association of Australia. Their advocacy for our industry stretches far and wide, so do consider becoming a member or renewing your membership if it has expired. It is a very small fee in the grand scheme of things, and it goes a long way for our industry. Now, even if you aren't a seaplane pilot, become a member and get the only colour-printed seaplane magazine in the world sent to your doorstep every 2 months. How good is that? For the Australian listeners, I am now offering floating hull training up in Darwin. The approximate 7-hour course includes 3 long theory briefings, online resources, river, lake, and some open area ocean experience, all in the amazingly fun Lake Buccaneer flying boat. For those who already have a float plane endorsement, you'll find the transition to hull flying very challenging and fun as you lower your eye line from sitting out of the water to almost in it. And for those who might not have the time or money for a full endorsement, my Seaplane Pilot for a Day experience is a great introduction to water flying. Getting your floating hull endorsement is a great way to expand your skills and experiences, so get in contact with me to discuss training options via email or Instagram today. Shout out to a new patron who joined up last week. Hayden Knowles is an Aussie pilot just starting up in the ag industry, hoping to one day get that floating hull endorsement I just mentioned. Thanks, Hayden, for showing your support of the show via Patreon, mate. It is much appreciated. I had another Apple Podcast 5-star written review last week also, this one coming from Plane_777VIP, who titled the review with "So many good stories" and said, "Love hearing the variety of stories from the seaplane industry around the world. Dan does a professional job at sharing these stories. Keep it up." Thanks for the great review, Plane_777VIP, and I will try and keep it up for you and others as long as I can. Don't you worry, my friend. If you can spare the time, just like Plane_777VIP, that's a very long name, to review the show, folks, that is much appreciated. Please do. It certainly helps share these stories around the world. Also, a quick update on ratings. Spotify now allows for a star rating to be given to a podcast. No written reviews yet, I don't believe. But now, for all of those listeners who have been listening on their Android devices wanting to help out poor little Dan with a little rating, you can do so now. Just look at the top of my podcast page. It is very simple and fast. Okay, on to today's show. And this episode, I have an aircraft sales manager whose middle name is Adventure. In actual fact, I don't know his middle name, but his first and last names are Kevin Oakes. Kevin's day job is to show off the incredibly capable Aviat Husky, the true adventurer's aircraft. Kevin was also a sales manager at Progressive Aerodyne selling the Sea Ray aircraft and is also representing the Sea Bear Russian-built twin-engine flying boat made famous by Michael Smith when he flew it from England to Australia, retracing the 1919 Great Air Race on its 100-year anniversary only 2 years ago. Let's step onto the Whipline 2100s. Climbing into the front seat of the tandem toy, we'll fire up the engine and taxi away from the dock, with sales rep Kevin in the back explaining the ins and outs of the Garmin 500 avionics, we'll enter direct to the Mississippi River, where our adventure will begin as we get up and on the step.
Right engine is turning. 12% fuel. A light.
Righty, welcome to On the Step. We have the regional sales director and seaplane specialist of Aviat Husky, all the way from Orlando, Florida, Mr. Kevin Oakes. How are you going, Kevin?
Hey, Dan. It's good to finally talk to you. We've been trying to do this for a while.
Yes, I was going to say that, mate. Finally is the key word there. It's been a few months back and forward. Obviously, I had a little bit of a break, and I'm happy to be back. Very happy to be back, in fact. And you were one of the guys. I'm like, Kevin, let's get this done. I want to talk some Aviat Husky, especially because I got my tailwheel only recently, mate. And I realize how much fun tailwheel aircraft are, especially with float flying in my background. Obviously, they are just as much fun. So I'm excited to hear about your role at Aviat, mate, because as I mentioned, you're the seaplane specialist, but you also fly a tailwheel little two-seater. This is going to be a fun episode, I reckon.
Let's do it.
So why don't we just jump into where you got into flying, mate, and was seaplane flying something that was at the beginning of your career?
No, not really. It almost happened accidentally. I worked in aviation, but not as a pilot. I worked for several 135 charter operations, but more in a management and executive capacity for some of the bigger charter groups in the U.S. And I was a private pilot since the early 1990s, you know, flying normal stuff, renting Club 172s and Archers and Cherokees and things like this. And it was about 12 years ago, my wife and I went on two vacations in the same year where seaplanes were involved. And one was down in the Florida Keys. We were in Key West, and we took an otter on floats over to the Dry Tortugas, and that was cool. And I thought, wow, this water flying is very interesting. And then later that year, in the fall, close to the end of summer, we went up to Alaska and ran into a gentleman who was off duty, but had a beaver on floats. And he said, look, don't do one of the tourist flights. Go with me. I'll show you around. And so we did. And that was really my intro to backcountry flying. And I told my wife on the airline flight home, I said, I think I'm missing out on something in this whole general aviation thing. You know, I'm doing $100 hamburgers and renting the little 172, which is fine. But wow, this off-airport stuff was pretty amazing. So, you know, I was pretty well hooked on that and started looking into getting a seaplane rating.
Yeah, right. One of the things I picked up on that, I love how, like, you know, a lot of the people that I interview on the show have super interesting jobs, like, you know, you being the sales director and a seaplane specialist. But it's not like you were someone who was flying from the age of 15 and, you know, was always around aviation and got their commercial super young kind of thing. Like, it's cool to hear that you got into it after being a manager and just being a private pilot.
Yeah, I mean, really, as a kid, airplanes didn't interest me that much. But what did interest me is where you could go. You know, adventure was always a draw for me. You know, I was always into camping and outdoors and this. And, you know, the backcountry flying and certainly seaplanes and tail draggers, bush planes and such really cater to that. And it blends the two loves into one. And so for me, I suddenly realized there's these adventures that could be had. And I like many people, I found it sort of inaccessible at first. You know, I looked into getting a seaplane rating, but then what do you do? You know, no one rented seaplanes around where I was. There wasn't a seaplane flying club, any of this kind of thing. So I thought, you know, maybe I'll have to save up a bit and buy one of these. And I didn't know much about a small two-seat flying boat called the Sea Ray, but I knew they manufactured them about 30 minutes from my home. And so I thought one day I'd go check it out, and I promised my wife I wouldn't buy one, but I, you know, I was just going to go look and, you know, and see. And I thought, well, how much could these things cost? You know, I'll maybe pick one of these up and I'll be a seaplane pilot. And as it turns out, the newly certified LSA version, the light sport, we call it here in the States, was quite expensive. And, you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be a little harder to get into than I thought. And so other than a few seaplane lessons, I really didn't have a lot of experience. But I really got along well with the CEO of the company at the time, and especially with Kerry Richter, who was he's the founder of Progressive Aerodyne, and he's the designer of the Sea Ray. And really just locally, certainly a legendary guy, but he, you know, became a mentor for me and a good friend for sure. And those guys offered me a job, and so I left the charter world, and I became the global sales manager for Progressive Aerodyne. And We took the newly certified LSA C-Ray and the kit business, and I worked there for about 6 years, helping to grow that from what started out as a small mom and pop kit manufacturer to what is now probably a recognized global airplane manufacturer.
Wow. So, you know, you promised your wife that you wouldn't go buy one, and you ended up getting a job there. That's pretty
well,
incredible.
Well, that's it. Mate. You know, good news and bad news. You know, when I got home, the good news is I didn't buy one. The bad news is I took a job that paid a lot less than what I, you know, was doing. Yeah. So, you know, we worked through that. But, you know, the next thing I knew, I was flying these C-Rays all over the country, and before too much longer, knew every single nut and bolt on these things. And you know, I think for me, the moral of that story, and even still in my current capacity, where I'm at, you know, people come to me all the time and they say, how do I get into this? And sometimes it's as simple as just meeting people. So yeah. I think for me, general aviation is very much about the people and less about the machines, and just get around it. You know, if you want to be around seaplanes, get around people that are around seaplanes, you know, at the seaplane base or at a manufacturer that might be nearby. And for me, that really kind of fulfilled a dream there. And we spent a good number of years there at Progressive Aerodyne. And while I was there, I met some great, you know, friends, people like Michael Smith, who, you know, most of your listeners probably know. He flew his C-Ray around the world, and he was doing that historic flight while I was there at the company, and came by the factory when he had some work done on his plane when he was through Florida, and did a presentation for a lot of the local seaplane pilots. Dan Nickens, who was a local pilot who flew Sea Rays off a yacht for a billionaire in the South Pacific, became a friend and mentor to me. And then, of course, you know, as I mentioned, Kerry Richter, the designer of the Sea Rays, you know, one of those pilots you fly with the guy and you learn something. You know, he's not trying to teach you anything. His knowledge is so vast and his experience is so deep that, you know, you get something from it every time you go somewhere with that guy in an airplane.
The Michael Smith thing, I want to touch on quickly, because he has an incredible story, as you mentioned there, flying a C-Ray around the world. You know, I've seen the movie that he made. It's an incredible movie. Read his book. Incredible stuff. And, you know, I had him on the podcast as well. We kind of didn't talk too much about that because of the amazing trip that he just did buying his L-65, you know, twin-engine Russian-built flying boat, which we'll talk about later on in the show with you. Back from London all the way through to to Australia. What was it like, I guess, being at Sea Ray at the time, you know, working with the company, having a guy fly a two-seat flying boat that you guys manufacture and you're the sales manager of around the world? Was it a bit nerve-wracking in a way, just making sure that Michael, you know, did get all the way around?
It wasn't so much nerve-wracking as it was like watching a serial drama kind of unfolding in front of you. It was exciting to watch where he went and the route he took and how long he would stay at each place. So, you know, we put limitations on ourselves, and, you know, Mike Smith did not do that in this trip. He went and continued on in that direction. And I remember thinking, you know, I thought my flying an 80-mile-an-hour Sea Ray to Oshkosh for 1,100 miles was this epic adventure. And here's this, you know, this guy circumnavigating the globe in the same airplane with no heater, no autopilot, multiple layers of socks on, you know, stopping in countries he had never been to before. So I think, one, it kind of defined what adventure was, and the fact that we often put limits on ourselves, and he didn't. And I thought that was, one, inspiring, and also, you know, humbling. So we weren't nerve-wracked in terms of would he make it or not. It was just more of the excitement of the whole thing. And, you know, at the conclusion of his flight, when he arrived to a relatively modest reception, you know, we all kind of had our own celebration for him at the factory, because that was a really big deal, not just for the airplane, but for him. And I think inspired quite a few others to do similar types of you know, aviation adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, mate. A 1,000-mile journey in a Sea Ray is still an epic adventure. Okay. Don't ever doubt yourself on that. All right. Yeah. Tell us about that Oshkosh experience as well, because I know that you had a bit of a run-in at Oshkosh the year that the Martin Mars was there.
Yeah. So we, you know, every year, one of the most exciting parts of the year is, you know, we live down in Florida, and of course Oshkosh is up in Wisconsin. So we have the opportunity to get out of the summer heat and humidity here and go up there for the, you know, the big aviation show. And I did that trip with the Sea Ray folks, 5 or 6 times. And we would always fly in formation, and we would always not take a direct route there. And oftentimes we'd fly the entire route at, you know, 70, 80 feet off the water, up the Mississippi River and across the, you know, the Middle Plains. And, it just always was, in fact, an adventure. And we were always with multiple planes, and it was a lot of fun. But, one particular year I remember being, probably my most memorable Oshkosh was, the year we brought the demo plane into the bay at the seaplane base there. And, well, it was a little, I called it the miniature Mars because we landed in a little red Sea Ray, which was, you know, the size of a thumbnail compared to the Martin Mars, which was anchored in the bay there, and taxied right by it. And I was just in awe of that machine. And we got a chance to tour the aircraft and get on board. And it was probably the most exciting seaplane experience I've ever had, even though we didn't go anywhere, just because the scale of that aircraft is unbelievable.
Yeah, you could probably almost get the Sea Ray airborne in its wingspan, I reckon. Like, the thing's ridiculously big, isn't it? It's crazy.
It is. It is. And it's ridiculously big when you take the little dinghy out to the door where you crawl into it. You're standing there looking up the side of it like a battleship. It's really, again, the scale of it just can't be described. And in pictures, it looks big, but not like it does when you're right up next to it.
So one thing I love to hear is these stories of multiple seaplanes just getting out and about and having these awesome fun adventures. Like, you know, that's something that I haven't had the opportunity to do in that kind of group scenario. Probably the closest thing I can remember is being at Airwit Sunday. We take 2 beavers out to Whitehaven Beach, and you're kind of flying along, not so much in formation because it was a bit of a, you know, it was a commercial operation. But, you know, you'd come in and kind of land parallel each other at the beach and taxi in, and, you know, you're taking a group of punters out to one of Australia's best beaches, and the plane's on anchor. That was pretty fun. But to do it in a private operation with, you know, with 6 or 7 guys in those types of aircraft, that must be a really fun adventure.
It was. And it was something that, you know, I was in a great position to kind of choose the folks that went along with us. And we had just some really, you know, everyone from a new customer who just took delivery of his airplane to, you know, folks like my friend Daniel Myers, who's one of the most talented instructors in the area for seaplanes and that. And it was, you know, we had folks with a lot of knowledge that would share that knowledge with us as we went along. Some of us had never flown in formation. I certainly hadn't. You know, it was loose backcountry type formation, but just the discussions of before we take off, we all have a plan. We all know, you know, where we need to be safe. And that was something I had never done before, you know, without a, you know, military background or any kind of formalized commercial training. And so, yeah, it was the highlight of the year. And we would have our customers, some of our CFIs would come along, and, you know, myself usually. And it was an unbelievable experience. And we never set an agenda because when you're flying that slow, the weather moves a lot faster than you do. So you just give yourself 4 days to get there. And sometimes it took 2 and sometimes it took 4. But it was really about the experience. And we never, you know, we never followed the magenta line, so to speak. Yeah. We followed the waterways and the rivers, and you know, it was great. And I would suggest for anyone, whether they are flying tailwheel backcountry bush type airplanes or whether they're seaplane pilots, you know, get a group of friends together and do this, because it's a, you know, it's a lot like motorcycles or something. It's, you know, the more the merrier. And as long as you're safe and you have discussions as to, you know, what the expectations are in the air, it is great fun. And we've got some great, great pictures and great memories along the way. And of course we're doing business, you know, we have to put on our business face, you know, it was all work, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, great experience.
Yeah. All work, Kevin. Good one. a question there that I have from that is, like you say, it could take you 4 days, it could take you 2 days. Like, when you're going out in these small aircraft and, you know, flying this long route, you obviously don't go, oh, I'm going to book a room at such and such hotel at this town, because you might not end up in that town. So where do you stay? Like, do you stay on a riverbed, you know, like some sort of sandbar one night on the Mississippi because you got there and that was okay? Like, how does that all work?
Yeah, you were prepared for it. Most often we didn't have to, you know, and in America, we're really blessed with, you know, in most parts of the country, there's an airport every 15 miles, you know, and every other airport has a hotel or two nearby. So we're so fortunate in that it's a vast country and there is a lot of remote area, but there's a lot of airports, and especially that route on the eastern seaboard of the United States. There's just, you know, you're always within gliding distance of an airport, I joke. And with a seaplane, double that, because you've got all the water, you know, around too. So we would usually stay in hotels, but it was funny because, you know, a good friend of mine who's a corporate pilot for, you know, he flies a Gulfstream jet, and he bought himself a Sea Ray, and he flew with us 1 year, and he said, you know, how do we flight plan this? You know, what do I plug into the computer? I'm like, man, we just take off and you flight plan along the way. Cause you know, there's all kinds of unforeseen things that happen, whether it be weather, we want to make a stop, we want to, you know, go hit some sandbars along the Mississippi River, like you say, do some videos and things like this. So yeah, it's very much a seat of the pants kind of adventure. And that made, you know, most of the typical, or I'll say normal pilots would sometimes raise an eyebrow at that, because, you know, they put in a flight plan and they follow that flight plan to the destination, and that's not really what the adventure flying is all about, right?
No, mate, no, not at all. You've just got me sitting here excited. I just want to get out there and do some backcountry flying with you and in a Sea Ray or anything, or probably, actually, I should say an Aviate Husky, I should say, since you're now working there. But what kind of things did you learn about being a sales manager when you took that role at Progressive Aerodyne there, and how much did you evolve as a leader, I guess, or a manager when you took on that position?
Well, I you know, there was a lot of personal growth there. I did not have a manufacturing background, so I did learn a lot about manufacturing and what it takes to produce a quality product. And you know, I was always very much a safety and customer advocate, and so the quality of the machine was important to me, because most of our customers were high time pilots, believe it or not, but they had never been in a seaplane, or they had never flown a tailwheel airplane. That particular one is both. It's a tail dragger and an amphib flying boat. So even some of them had floats experience, but not hull experience. So, having a substantial machine, though being a recreational airplane in this light sport category, I think we did a good job, and there was a lot of personal growth, but I think it was, you know, I can't take credit for any one thing. It was a really good team of people that, you know, made that from a, you know, kind of a little, you know, basic little kit airplane to a pretty substantial and superior LSA.
So then you moved on and now you've become, a sales, manager there at, or sales director at, Aviate. How did you find that transition over to more now land-based aircraft and also an amphib float plane?
Yeah, well, it was kind of selfish, because while at Progressive, I was flying hulled seaplanes, and I was accumulating hundreds of hours of hull time. And I thought, you know, I really don't have much experience on floats. And, you know, most seaplanes are floats, and most of my friends who flew seaplanes flew 185s and, you know, Super Cubs and Huskies and things like this. So the local outfit nearby where I live had a Husky on floats, amphib floats, for rent. So I bought a block time in it and I started flying it, and I really fell in love with the characteristics of that airplane. And I kind of made a mental note in my head that this is the airplane I'm going to buy one of these days. You know, I wasn't quite ready to do that yet, but so I did. And after leaving Progressive Aerodyne, there were some changes there. And so I decided I wasn't going to work for a small aircraft manufacturer anymore. I was just going to fly around for fun. And I kind of went to Aviate looking for maybe a trade-in or a secondhand Husky on floats. And, you know, they had saw what I did with Progressive and, you know, on the marketing side and some of the manufacturing stuff. And they asked me to join them. They had a lot of Bush pilots, but not a lot of seaplane folks in the organization. So at that point, most of my flight time was seaplane time. So, and that was really where my interest was. And they said, look, we want to do more on floats, work a little closer with the float manufacturers and such. And so, you know, again, went home to my wife and said good news and bad news, you know, so here we go again. So,
what you're trying to say, Kevin, is basically you rock up to a business and just go, yeah, g'day, mate. My name's Kevin. Just looking to buy an airplane. Oh, what's that? You've got a job for me? Oh, no worries.
That's it. That's my career plan, which I don't necessarily recommend to a young person getting started, but it's worked out okay.
Disclaimer, that may not work for everybody.
Correct. Yeah. Aviat's a very different type of company, whereas, you know, the light sport manufacturing world is very different. It follows a different standards for manufacturing, whereas Aviat is a legacy manufacturer. It's really been in business, and their history could be hours of conversation, but, you know, they've been around since, you know, since the 30s and 40s with other aircraft types. And then, of course, through Christensen Industries, you know, with the Pitts and the Christian Eagle, yeah. Aerobatic airplanes. And so it's a legacy type organization. And the first time I walked through their factory, when I saw the attention to detail in material selection and in quality control and the number of, you know, engineering talent and paint talent, you know, they do all their own paint, they do all their own fabric, you know, I was really blown away. And coming from the ASTM standards for building airplanes into that, I understood why I loved that rental Husky so much that I'd flown for 20 hours, because it was evident at the factory what this thing was. So I just raised my hand and said, sure, where do you want me? And so that's how that came to be. And we base a Husky demo aircraft down here in Florida. Most of our customers are, you know, maybe in Idaho or Montana, Wyoming, Alaska, flying Bush and with the Huskies. But Florida is a playground for seaplanes. And so it just made sense that we base the aircraft here so that we could give the kind of the Husky experience to people who haven't flown them before down here in Tavares, Florida.
Can you share a little bit about the history of the Husky? Because to the untrained person like myself, I've always looked at the two-seat tailwheel aircraft, you know, in pictures online and go, oh, that's a supercarb or that's a Piper Cub. And then, you know, all of a sudden, the last few years, I've just noticed that, oh, hold on a second, those pictures aren't that, that's a Husky. To the untrained eye, they look quite similar. So when did the Husky kind of become what it is? And then when did it transfer to being a seaplane option as well?
Yeah. So Christian Industries was the company at the time. And this is, you know, going back into the 80s. They were manufacturing the Eagle and Pitts, but the, you know, sales were kind of slow for these bi-wing aerobatic airplanes. And the company had some history building crop duster aircraft up until about 1959 and an aircraft called the Call Air, if you go way back in the history, which was a backcountry airplane, a low wing. So Christian Industries went and looked to buy the rights to the Super Cub and the Champion, and they just couldn't come to a deal for various reasons. And so the company decided they would start with a clean sheet of paper and they would build what they would have evolved the Super Cub or the Champion into. So it started way ahead of where it would have otherwise. And the best way I can describe a Husky to someone who flies Super Cubs or, you know, other types of tandem tailwheel airplanes is it's that old world flying experience that you get with a Super Cub or a Cub, but in a modern airplane. It's very evident when you sit in it that it is a modern airplane. IFR panel, 16G crash protection seats, amazing paint, crash protection roll cage for the occupants, not just the pilot, but the backseat passenger as well. So the flight experience, if you like flying those old tandem airplanes, is in this new modern airplane. It's just of course, you're in, you know, a current generation airplane, which adds performance, safety, you know, speed, utility, and so on. So you've got more useful load, you're getting there faster, you're burning less fuel, you know, the whole nine. So to answer your question, when the Husky started in 1985, they started designing the Husky, and it was certified in 85, and it was certified in 1987 was the first Husky. And so they've, you know, just evolved since then. And they've been going on floats since pretty near the beginning. Okay. You know, it always made a good float platform, even going back then. And most Huskies are on whipline floats, but, you know, you can get whipline, whipline 2100s or PK floats for them. They're both manufacturers are certified to go on the Husky.
What's the process for transferring the aircraft from floats to wheels or vice versa? And, you know, do you have a lot of people who go back and forth all the time to have that tail wheel bush kind of off airport experience on wheels and then, you know, throw it on the floats for the summer or something like that?
Yeah, they do. It's easy for me to say that it's an easy transition because, you know, it's a few bolts and done. It depends on where you're at in the world or in the country. You know, if you're up in Alaska or the Pacific Northwest, it's very common for shops to swap floats for wheels, and they can do it in a short period of time. If you're down here in Florida, typically people leave a float plane on floats or they leave a wheeled airplane on wheels. So if you took it to a shop to have it done, you know, you're looking at probably a week or two for them to do the 9 or 10 hours of labor to do it. But it depends on where you're at. But yes, a lot of our customers do swap back and forth seasonally, and some of our customers are lucky enough to have one of each, and they don't have to bother with it.
Is there a commercial use for the Husky at all, or is it more of a private pilot's aircraft?
I think one of the most exciting or the most interesting commercial applications, and yes, the Huskies have been used for fish and wildlife and other things. Flight training, of course, is a big thing for the Husky. But I think one of the most exciting is one of our customers is with a group called the Grameti Fund in Africa, and they do wildlife observation, you know, looking for poachers that are hunting animals there in game reserves and, you know, places like that. And they're doing aerial surveillance and very interesting group that they use their Huskies. I believe they have two of them now for that type of work. So yes, there are a lot of Huskies in commercial operation for various things, but most of them end up to be recreational airplanes.
What about the partnership that you have working with Whip Air? Because you know, obviously Aviat Husky or Aviat itself is its own kind of entity, but to team up with another completely separate business, and I should say PK as well, as you mentioned the PK floats, but how does that kind of mash together there? You know, I've spoke to Amy Gesh on the show before. I imagine you've had a few conversations with her maybe in the past.
Of course, yeah.
How do those two team up and become, you know, the one aircraft?
Well, you know, we wanted to, as a manufacturer, we wanted to sell more Huskies on floats, you know, right out of the box. And Whip Air, of course, has been in business for a long time. And we went to them and said, look, we want to do some collaboration and some co-marketing, and we'd like to put a demo on your floats and take it out, and they can use it for their shows, and we can use it for ours, and they can demo their customers, and we demo ours. And so it was really, you know, you take two small manufacturers that have a common interest and a common customer. It just made a lot of sense. So when we presented the idea, they jumped on it right away, and which is what led to the recent story in Water Flying Magazine, which is the Seaplane Pilots Association magazine here, where Mark Twombly and I did a trip down the Mississippi River in a Husky on the 500th set of Whipline 2100 floats. So they set the 500th set aside for us, and we did some promotion and some marketing with that airplane, and displayed it with Whip Air in Tavares recently. And you know, we're continuing on until that airplane recently sold, and now it lives in a hangar near Oshkosh. So it kind of went back to not too far from where it started.
Yeah, right. Tell us about the story you did with Mark there for the Seaplane Pilot Association magazine, because I had a read of that. It was an epic little adventure you guys had up the Mississippi. Is that another amazing little off-airport adventure that you've done?
It was, you know, there are certain times where in general aviation, the weather cooperates and sometimes it doesn't. And with Mark and I on this particular trip, if there was a good weather button, it was one level above that. And we had about three or four solid days of just the most beautiful, cool, crisp spring days where, you know, the water was good for water landings and the sky was good for sightseeing. And so we, after the agreement with Whip Air happened, we sent them an aircraft and they put those 500 set of floats on it. And Mark and I went to pick that airplane up. He had mentioned to me they hadn't done a story on the Husky in a while. And, you know, he kind of wanted to see it. And I said, well, look, I've got to bring it home. So why don't we do this? So we followed the entire length of the Mississippi River without missing a turn from South St. Paul, where the floats are manufactured at the Whip Air facility, to all the way to Memphis. And then we decided we were kind of done with the Mississippi and we cut across to North Georgia and did some mountain lakes up in the just south of North Carolina. And North Georgia area is a very beautiful, scenic, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 foot mountains there. So nothing extreme, but good scenery and good mountain lake flying. And then we followed the Savannah River down past Augusta to the East Coast, and followed the East Coast back to Central Florida. So it was an epic adventure. The water, the weather was beautiful, and that that story can be seen in the July issue of the Waterflying magazine.
Yeah, that's cool. I thought I had a pretty cool, well, hobby, I guess. This is not my job, but interviewing people all around the world, hearing their stories. But how cool is Mark Twombly's job? We'd just be like, yeah, haven't done a story on the Aviat Husky for a while. Hey, Kevin, you want to fly the Aviat Husky across half of America and go float flying, like, so I can take some pictures of it and write a story?
It was, and you know, Mark's the kind. Mark is he's a real aviator. You know, he flies corporate jets and I believe a Pilatus and something else. He flies a couple of different business airplanes, and then he flew a rented 172 to the airport to leave it there, so that we had it, so that he had a ride home, basically, when we got back. So he, you know, in a matter of a day and a half or so, he flew this little rental 172 from his job flying a jet and jumped into the Husky and flew it as if he had owned it for 20 years. The guy's just very talented. He's we've done a few trips together, and he's a great guy. And for those that don't know, he's the editor of Waterflying magazine. So, but very accomplished pilot, good guy, and, you know, a lot of fun on a trip like this.
Yeah, I've kind of got him on the list of people I need to kind of have a chat to. I think this is inspiring me a little bit more to get him on the show as well. You know, Steve McCoy from the Seaplane Pilot Association has really always said, you know, Mark's a good guy to get on the show, so I'll have to pull my finger out and get him in contact with him. But you do a lot of kind of promotional stuff for the Seaplane Pilot Association as well. Can you tell us about your relationship you have with them?
Yeah, so it started, you know, at Sea Ray, that, you know, Mark wanted to do we were brainstorming at one point and we kind of had the same idea at different times. And Mark had said we had always dreamed of kind of having a promotional airplane for the Seaplane Pilots Association to promote our agenda and our goals and our mission. And we had an extra demo. We had two demo aircraft, one of which wasn't being used too often. And, you know, it just, the brainstorm happened and I got the permissions from the power that be. And we basically loaned that aircraft to the Seaplane Pilots Association for a year, and they were able to use that little blue Sea Ray to do some promotion of that airplane, of course, but also, you know, go to some of the events and things. And instead of showing up in a car or in someone else's airplane, they were able to take an official Seaplane Pilots Association liveried airplane to these shows. And I think it was good, and I think it was effective, and I hope other manufacturers do that with that organization, because I think the Seaplane Pilots Association does a lot for seaplane pilots. And, you know, it's good to give back in whatever way you can. And I think the manufacturers benefit from their advocacy as much as the individual pilots do, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So that was that. And then of course, you know, I gave those guys an opportunity. I didn't want Mark to have all the funds, so I brought the brought the Husky on floats down there to Winter Haven, where the headquarters is located, to give Steve a go in the Husky, and, yeah, and Abby Kellett as well, who's an instructor, yeah, down there and does the podcast with them and such.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's the next step now for Aviate Husky and yourself, mate? Like, you know, do you go around and start touring more with the aircraft, or, you know, how's that all work?
We do. You know, COVID has changed the world a little bit for everybody. General aviation is relatively healthy here throughout COVID. I think a lot of people retired early. A lot of people traded in airplanes and decided, you know, I was going to do this in 5 years. I think I'll do it now. Flight schools decided to go ahead and renew their fleet and get a new airplane and what have you. So we've been a busy company during this time, which is good for general aviation. It's very good because it's kept people flying, and I think that's good. It's not been the case everywhere in the world, and I know a lot of places were completely shut down. So I'm very reserved in my excitement for how good general aviation is here in the States, at least for right now. But so we continue to promote. You know, the Husky is an extraordinary platform, and it's not one that needs to evolve a lot. You know, avionics get updated, safety equipment gets updated, but the experience that you get flying that airplane is not too unlike you would in the 1985 airplane. You just have more useful load and more power and more safety and these things. So, you know, I think one of the things to do is to preserve the flying experience of these old world style airplanes, because that's where the fun is. Certainly flying with the door open on a warm day and, you know, just above the water, there's just nothing like it. So in addition to evolving our airplane, we want to preserve what makes this type of flying exciting. So that's really the mission right now. And, you know, business is busy. So we we're delivering a lot of airplanes. We're meeting a lot of new people along the way. And, you know, it's exciting times for Aviat.
You spoke about delivery there. Do you do a lot of the deliveries of aircraft that are purchased?
Sure. Yeah, we do. We do. We sometimes it's me, sometimes it's one of our CFI pilots. Depends on our customer. Someone needs an insurance sign off from a CFI. I'm not an instructor. Sometimes someone just wants some familiarization, so I'll bring them their airplane and we'll fly together for a day. So yeah, it just depends on the customer and what they need.
Yeah, right. And do you do much wheel flying in the Aviat?
Oh, yeah.
Husky, yeah.
It's, you know, we could do a whole nother podcast on the wheel flying because it's so, you know, it's the same but different. It has the same excitement as the float flying and the seaplane flying, but it's different. You know, when you're looking at a sandbar and trying to decide whether to land there or not, you know, or a field, or, you know, a piece of gravel bar, or piece of land. So off airport flying is really exciting, and such a capable machine as the Husky, it spoils you a little bit because there are things I would do in the Husky I certainly wouldn't do in certain other tandem two-seat, you know, tailwheel airplanes. So, you know, our skills are always getting better doing these things, but it's a lot of fun, and it's very similar to the float flying in that, I don't know about you, but when I was just 172 private pilot, I was kind of a lazy pilot. You know, I didn't use my rudders very much. Because, you know, the tendencies of the airplane to get squirrely are kind of engineered out of those types of airplanes, which is, yeah, what makes them so good. But when you get into a tailwheel airplane, I had a friend with a Super Cub, and he said, oh, you want to get a go? I'll let you sit in front, and, you know, you go in it. And I remember my first tailwheel landing, and I thought, well, this is different. So I think seaplane flying and tailwheel flying make the pilot a better pilot, if that makes sense. You know, it really keeps your stick and rudder skills active. You know, when you're flying seaplanes, it's not just the winds and the weather above the water. It's the currents and the, you know, as I don't have to tell you, you know, it's all the things that you have with boating. Regulations and where you're going to dock, and can you even dock, and do you beach, or do you put the wheels down and go up a ramp that's not made for a seaplane? You know, there's so many elements to it. I think it sharpens your decision-making skills, And with the tailwheel flying, you know, flying off airport, I had a really good instructor who'd been flying Bush for 30 years. He said, look, Kevin, when I look down at a spot that I need to land at, I look for every reason I can not to land there. And he said, if you can't find a reason not to land there, then go ahead, land. It's probably fine. And I always remember that every landing, I look for the reason not to land. And the most exciting thing about what I do is I get a pilot who's maybe been flying an airliner for the last 10 years, and he wants to do some backcountry flying, and he's experienced and he's knowledgeable, or she. And we get in the airplane, and when the first time we land in someone's field, you know, their eyes are like golf balls, right? They're like, we can do this? Like, this is amazing. So much like I thought when I first started looking into seaplanes, it seems kind of inaccessible, but it's not. You just surround yourself with it, and it's a very exciting type of flying. And it's really, you know, for me, it's the only type of flying I'm interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd back that up 100%. Like, as I mentioned, just only got my tailwheel endorsement a few weeks ago. And in the 3 hours of experience I've got now in tailwheels, I just find them just as challenging, I guess, as flying seaplanes with the stick and rudder schools, as you mentioned, but also that off-airport experience going into these, you know, paddocks and flying over a dam on short final and then kind of raising the nose to land uphill onto this paddock where it's been slashed. And this is probably very, very basic tailwheel, you know, experience that I've got, as in location-wise, whereas people are taking them into rock bars and gravel bars and, you know, sand bars and all these type of bars. It's just, yeah, it's just such a fun environment and a challenging environment. And like you said, people don't realize that it is super accessible for anyone.
It is, and I highly recommend it. And even if someone doesn't think they're interested in tailwheel or seaplane, give it a go at least once, and you'll really have, if nothing else, you'll really have a good time, and it'll put a smile on your face and give you some stories to tell, because every flight is a learning experience, and there's always, you always have one of those moments in every flight, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like you said before, it really does sharpen up your flying skills. You mentioned there before at the start of the episode, mate, Michael Smith. Now, you and Michael became good mates, and obviously Michael then progressed on to buy or have some interest in buying this Russian-built flying boat. Tell us about your involvement with Michael back then and how that's evolved to where you are today with that kind of partnership with that company.
I was really interested in what he was buying, and I actually didn't speak with him too much about it, but a good friend of his is also a good friend of mine, a gentleman I mentioned earlier, Dan Nickens, who was flying those seaplanes off the yacht down in the South Pacific, which another really tough job someone had to be doing. Exactly. So he was doing this dream job. But they're also very good friends. And, you know, through Dan, he was telling me about the build process of this Sea Bear airplane. And I knew of it, but I didn't know much about it. As irony would have it, my wife, Svetlana, originally by birth is from Russia. So we used to visit, you know, from time to time. And so I was pretty familiar and spoke enough to get around. And I thought, you know, I want to go look at this thing. And as it turns out, Mike Smith was about to take delivery of his Sea Bear. So myself, him, and Dan Nickens, we all went over there to Samara, Russia to look at it. And I spent about 4 or 5 days flying the L-65 and the L-45 Sea Bears. And I was really, really impressed with the airplane. It's a tail dragger. It's four, or can be configured for, 6 seats. It's a very docile twin engine airplane. I had not flown many twins prior to that. So it was, you know, very, very unlike some Grumman multi-engine seaplanes I had the privilege of flying, which I found very intimidating. This was not. It very much reminded me of a big Sea Ray, really. And handled similarly on the water. And it was a big airplane, but it felt like a small airplane. And I fell in love with the thing. The folks at Sea Bear said, look, we would love to sell these in North America, but it's not certified there. And, you know, we've got some challenges, but our biggest challenge is the language. And so they asked me if I would help them. So once again, Kevin goes to look at an airplane and finds work to do. So I told them, you know, in kind of an informal capacity, I would, you know, kind of be a spokesperson for them. And if it came to it, a sales outlet or a distributor kind of thing. But, you know, it really hasn't formulated because that was just prior to COVID. And, you know, they had to close their factory for a little while during that due to regulation. And, you know, they have a lot of Russian orders. These airplanes have been around for a while. They have a lot of people in Russia that are buying these. And that company produces 2 or 3 airplanes a year. But we're trying to get one here to the States. Selfishly, I want to fly it around to some of my favorite, you know, backcountry spots. But there is a lot of interest in the United States and Canada for this airplane. And so I'm trying to help them in any way I can get it here, because when I was in Samara and had the opportunity to fly them, I found it to be just a really extraordinary airplane that if certified here would really have no competition. You know, it's just, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah, it looks like so much fun. And I've had a look around at myself in Australia here when Michael Smith had his recreation flight of the Great Air Race, the 100-year anniversary back in 2019, when he came all the way back from England and landed at Darwin Airport to the minute he landed, you know, to recreate that 100-year anniversary. And then, you know, a couple of days later, Michael and I got caught up and had a look around at myself. And yeah, it just looks like such a modern, capable, simple flying boat. You know, the hull being all composite, the simple engines, Rotax engines there, and heaps of space and comfort. I think Michael's absolutely loving flying it around Australia, even though he's very limited to where he can go with the COVID, as you mentioned.
Sure. Yeah, it's I think you'll see more of them in different markets in the world. And should the company decide to invest and to get it certified elsewhere, I don't think they'll have much trouble doing that. It's an established airframe. It's got good. There's really not much negative to talk about it. It's a great platform. And I believe another one was recently delivered to Australia, but I don't know that for sure. My bigger question is why.
Coming soon, I think.
And I'll have to find out more about that, because you know, it gives me an excuse to maybe come visit you guys down at the bottom of the world there and check it out. But I I'm excited for it. The company is healthy and they're producing airplanes, and you know, we haven't brought one to the U.S. yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah, and mate, if you do come down here, I'm sorry, I won't be able to see you in person because I don't have a job to offer you, unfortunately. So,
as long as we're not looking at an airplane, it'll be fine. We can just meet at the pub or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you might get a job at the pub instead.
Right. Yeah.
Great stuff, mate. As you'd know, being a big fan of the podcast, I like to finish episodes with a splash and dash questionnaire, some seaplane orientated, rapid fire questions. I'm not sure about this one. Normally, I kind of know what the favorite seaplane you've flown is. I'm guessing with your ties currently to Aviate Husky, it's probably going to be the Husky. But is it your favorite seaplane, or does the Sea Bear jump in front of it?
It's the Husky is my favorite seaplane, not because I'm with the company. It's the other way around. I'm with the company because it was my favorite seaplane.
Yeah.
So I went to them seeking one out for myself, and it's. The thing that makes the Husky unique is that you can't really quantify or qualify in a brochure or on a website what makes it so good. You really have to fly it, which is why we did the demo plane and the deal with Whip Air and all that. But it just is an extraordinary tandem airplane. And, you know, if you don't need more than 2 seats, there's just nothing that can even compare to it. And there's places you'd go and things you would do in the Husky that you wouldn't even think of doing in other tandem airplanes that are similar to it on floats. And so, you know, the quality, the safety factor, and the performance of it are just head and shoulders above the best. So I would say the Husky, not because I'm associated with that company, but I'm associated with them because that is my favorite. The Sea Bear was extraordinary, and if it was more accessible, it may edge it out, but for right now, I'll stick with the Husky. You can bet.
I did see your website, and I looked at the distributors or the you know, sales people through your website there, and there's a lot of you guys through America, and a couple worldwide, but no one in Australia just yet, mate. So maybe the role's reversed a little bit here. Maybe I speak to Kevin Oakes, I get a job with Husky type thing.
Well, yeah. My big question for you is, why aren't there more down there? And I know there's exchange rate and some issues there that none of us have control over, but it would seem to me, especially on wheels, would be such a great platform for the kind of flying that you have and the distances that you have. So my question to you was going to be, why aren't there more Huskies there? And yeah, maybe we need to put you on that map.
Exactly.
And look, get one down there for you to fly.
Yeah, if you bring one down here, mate, I will write you an article. How's that sound?
Okay, sounds good. Let's do it.
What about lake, river, open ocean, or anywhere else? What's been the best place that you've ever landed a seaplane?
Best place. Well, the most exciting, I think, was the Volga River in Russia, because it's some place I would never have thought I would be able to fly. And it very much reminded me of the Mississippi River here in the United States, which is one that I find myself on more often than I thought I ever would. But the Volga River was amazing. It's next to a very modern city, Samara, where the Sea Bear is manufactured. And ironically, my first water landing there was in Michael Smith's L-65, as it was undergoing flight testing with the chief pilot there at Sea Bear. So it was, it was exciting for the location and for the particular plane that I was flying and whose plane it was. So I think that would probably be the top spot among many other great places that I've landed.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I imagine just the idea, the concept of flying in a totally different country like Russia, to be able to get a seaplane in the water, like as you mentioned there, that's almost a place where you would just never think that could happen.
Well, that's it. Yeah, that's it. It's exactly it. And it's not like we saw a lot of others, out there, but they were well recognized on the, with the controlling agencies that we had to talk to. And it's much more, it's not as free as it is here in terms of you can kind of go anywhere you want, but it was extraordinary. And I learned a lot. Yeah. And that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me a fair bit of when I was flying in Vietnam, down at Ha Long Bay, taking a caravan into Ha Long Bay when there's no GA operations in Vietnam at all. And then here is this seaplane coming in and landing in one of the most amazing location like Ha Long Bay that is just so historic almost, with its thousands of islands and huge big cliffs. It was just, it was pretty amazing. Is this probably the ultimate dream seaplane job, mate, being a sales rep for a company like Avia?
Yeah, I think so. It goes back to the people. The people at the factory that I work with and interact with, the other sales folks that I work with, the customers, the people that are interested in this type of flying and that come along, not just the ones that buy the airplane. Not everyone's able to spend this much money on a recreational, two-seat airplane, but just the people that you meet along the way doing the shows at Oshkosh and Sun and Fun and all of the regional shows that we do. And that's the best part. The flying is fantastic, but it's not as much the flying as it is the people. So for me, that makes it a dream job as a people person. And to be able to share what I've been privileged to do and fortunate enough to do with others is just the best part of the job.
That's awesome. What about the ideal seaplane to fly around the world in? And I know if you say the Sea Ray, I know you're lying, okay?
It was not on my list. if I was going to do the around the world, I would have to choose the Sea Bear, because it has room. It can be equipped for a trip like that. You could essentially turn it into a, like a caravan, RV, camper type configuration. I think the Sea Bear would be the ultimate plane for around the world, or even, Patagonia or Alaska or any place where you'd spend a season flying. Maybe you don't have to go around the world, but it's, I think it would be the right platform. And, burning 10, 11 gallons an hour between two engines is pretty spectacular too. So it would be not only a good machine to get the job done, but it's economical as well.
Yeah, I'm sure Michael felt a lot more comfortable flying that thing, even though it was only across half the world, with two engines running rather than one, especially crossing.
Absolutely.
I don't think he crossed a lot of water on that trip. I think it was more of a, you know, more direct route along the land, but there was obviously water crossings he would have had.
Sure.
What about glass cockpit or steam seaplane? You've probably flown both, I imagine.
You know, I do fly both, and I've been spoiled by the glass. You know, the technology in these panels are unbelievable. The situational awareness is better. So I guess if you had to tell me which one is better, or you have to ask me which one is better, I would say glass. But there's something about the round dials that kind of, especially in an old world type flying experience where you just, it feels right. So I don't have an answer to the question. I like both. I think the new equipment makes airplanes safer, but I do like a six pack, you know, in the panel as well. So I'll take either one.
It's funny because I feel like the glass is more orientated to IFR flight these days, isn't it? And then steam's a bit more of the general aviation VFR type flying. And when we talk about this kind of flying with the Aviate Husky, it's more don't look at the instruments, isn't it? It's just look outside and go where the river takes you.
Well, it is, but in a modern airplane, you know, the Husky can be equipped IFR with autopilot and the whole thing. So, you know, with a when you're sitting in front of a Garmin 500 TXI panel and a GNS 750 and autopilot on, you know, maybe you're going for a backcountry adventure that's all VFR in northern Idaho. But if you live in Seattle or certain parts of California or certain parts of the East Coast, you might have to file IFR to get away from your home hangar to that VFR adventure. So the Husky is one of the few tandem airplanes that can be configured IFR for the purposes of getting to the VFR adventure. So yes, once you get there and you're doing your gravel bar or your sandbar or your cattle ranch or wherever you're going to land, it's all looking out the window. You're not looking at the instruments, but a lot of people like the convenience of filing to get to that adventure. So there's something to that.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, where do I sign up for this thing? Hey, like you just keep, you're putting the good sell on me here. This is becoming one of my favorite airplanes. Finally, mate, what's the last bit of advice you would give for anyone aspiring to be a seaplane pilot?
You know, just get around it, like we talked about earlier. You know, go to the seaplane base and hang around. If you're a pilot that is renting planes on wheels and you want to fly on floats, just find one, you know, beat up rental or a seaplane. There's a lot of places that do seaplane instruction, but it's not their primary business. You know, you may have to kind of ask around to find them. They have 10 Piper Cherokees, but then they've got over in the corner, they've got a Super Cub on floats or something like this. So I think that's the main thing. You know, Seaplane Pilots Association is a good resource because if you subscribe to their magazine and such, they have a seaplane training issue, I think, every year where they send out a thing on where you can do a seaplane rating. And just, I think if you're around it, you'll find it. And it is a little bit harder than just going to the airport and taking flying lessons in a traditional airplane. But you know, that's a good place to start, too. So I would say just be around it however you can.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Well, Kevin, it's been a great chat, mate. I was really looking forward to this chat for a long time, and I'm really glad we had it now. And I've put the Husky on my list of airplanes to go and fly when I get to America one day again.
Sure.
But thanks very much for taking the time out of your schedule with family and work and everything to share your story in aviation. And really like to thank you for coming on The Step.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I look forward to the podcast when it comes out and enjoy the information that you share. And when you do finally get up here, be sure to give me a call and we'll go flying. Have some fun.
Sounds good, mate. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
And that's the show for today, folks. Don't Kevin's stories just make you want to jump in a Husky and fly off into the sunset for like a week exploring whatever needs to be explored? They are such cool stories. I just love the adventure of aviation we can have in machines like that. Thanks again, Kevin. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, folks, or also a star review on Spotify if you use that. Write in a seaplane scare if you have one for me to share. Don't forget to join the Seaplane Pilot Association. Oh, and come and do a floating hull endorsement with me. You will love it. It's been a pleasure as always, folks, but until next time, thanks very much for coming on The Step.